Saturday Night Theatre, a Sybil Thorndyke festival in which Dame Sybil stars in some of her favourite plays. For the first in the series, we present The Foolish Gentlewoman by Marjorie Sharp, adapted for radio by Donald McQuinney. The Foolish Gentlewoman.
He keeps that up all day. Oh, why not? Sunlight, blue sky, cool gardens, stately white house, all rural conveniences, only 8 miles from London. And peace. Well, who wouldn't want to sing? Apparently Simon Brocken.
What on earth can Isabel be up to?
Poor man. His city clothes were hardly designed for this setting. His garden chair is not quite comfortable. He's being kept waiting. And at the best of times, he's not the best-tempered of men. He likes the old-fashioned conscientiousness, the old-fashioned integrity. Today, he can't find them. All he can find is slapdash work, slipshod thinking, bribery, corruption, and the black market. Or so he says. However...
Here you are, Mr. Brocken. I brought you some tea.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sure Mrs. Brocken won't be much longer. She's had to take Bogey to the vet.
What, is that creature still alive?
That's Jacqueline Brown. Oh. Jackie, Isabel's companion. And this is Isabel's house. Simon, Isabel's brother-in-law, is here by special invitation. Isabel's been pressing him to come for weeks. Now that the bomb damage to his own house is being repaired, he's taken the plunge and there he is. Still waiting for Isabel. However, Jackie's welcome is warm enough, and she seems to organize the household quite well. She learned how in the ATS.
Oh, I've forgotten. I'll get some tea. Humphrey, tea?
Humphrey's on holiday. He's Isabel's nephew from New Zealand. He's just been demobilized. He's taking a rest before going back to schoolmastering. At the moment, he's sunbathing.
Good Lord.
Yeah, quite so, sir. Good afternoon, Uncle Simon.
Good afternoon, Humphrey. Put that towel round you at once. What are you doing here?
Staying with Auntie.
Are you expected, sir?
Well, certainly I'm expected. The bomb damage to my house is being repaired, and in the meantime...
Pernicious old boffin. I quote Humphrey. And I dare say Jackie would agree. Neither of them is particularly anxious to have the repose of the White Lodge disturbed, for various reasons. However, Uncle Simon will undoubtedly be spending most of his time in the city drawing up vindictive wills. Meanwhile, one must have tea.
Oh, dear. I must go and finish picking the peas. They're for dinner.
Oh, yeah, I'll help.
Oh,
excuse
you.
Us, Uncle Simon.
Where is Isabel? Uncle Simon's all right, of course. In fact, as Humphrey has been heard to say, Uncle Simon is always perfectly civil as long as he isn't spoken to. And he always, in any circumstances, wants to be alone. He thinks he's alone now, as a matter of fact. But...
Would you like any bits of bomb?
What? Oh, what may you be?
I'm Greta Poole. Me and Mum's the caretakers. At least we was the caretakers before everyone come back. And now we oblige. Oh, we shan't have to be glad when they all clear out.
Your mother should be glad to find herself still in employment.
Okay.
One doesn't see much of the Pools. However, they speak for themselves, or rather, Greta does. Mum will doubtless emerge in good time.
Out.
Meanwhile...
Do you want any bits of bomb?
Thank you, no.
I don't either. I used to collect them. Oh, it's funny what you'll do when you're a kid. It was Mum's idea. We thought they'd make nice souvenirs, but they got too common.
You ought to have been evacuated.
Not me. I stayed with Mum. A lady did come after me once, but I cried and cried, and Mum cried till she went away. And the next time she came, I hid in the attic, and Mum told her I'd gone to Scotland.
Oh.
Of course, she saw me about again in a day or two, and I told her I'd come back because the other kids was all infectious. So she finally gave up.
The woman was undoubtedly attempting her duty.
I dare say, but you shouldn't have said Mum was keeping me to dodge the call-up. Mum wanted ever so to be a wren. She'd have looked smashing in them little caps.
Yes.
Well, she just couldn't bear to leave me. But she joined the ARP. She was outgoing messages.
I trust she didn't leave the house empty at night.
Oh, no. Mum told the chief warden she had a little girl, and he agreed straight away I oughtn't to be left. So I was a real advantage to her.
Oh, really?
And we made ever such a nice place in the cellar, like a nest it was, with mattresses all round.
Eh?
Well, We took mattresses off all the beds. We didn't think anyone would mind.
No, no one would have minded.
It was lovely. We used to creep in whenever the bombs got closer. And Mum used to tell me the stories of all the movies she'd seen. She'd remember the dialogue and everything.
Really?
And sometimes she went on at 6 a.m. And then we'd make tea first. And sometimes the moon was still out when the sky was getting blue. And if there was snow, the air was cold and silvery.
Yes,
and much thinner than usual air. And the snow crunched under our feet. And
surely your mother didn't take you with her?
Didn't she? Oh, well, no, of course not. But she told me about it. She tells me everything Mum does.
Jackie, I'm back.
Ooh, well, so long.
Uh-huh. It seems that Isabel is back. Good. Now we can get on with the play.
My dear Simon, it's how lovely to see you again. I do hope you haven't been waiting too long.
I said I'd be here at 5, and I was.
Yes, dear, but you might have missed your train. Dear Simon, you know, I simply had to take Bogey to the vet. This time it's not only his paws, it's his ears, too. And don't say he ought to be shot, dear. Bogey's only 9, which if 1 year of a dog's life equals 7 of ours, makes him exactly the same age as you are.
Oh.
Well, I took Bogey to the vets, and then on the way home, which was really what made me late, I popped in to ask Dora Tremaine up. I knew you'd want to see her again.
Why?
Now, don't be silly, dear. You've known Dora Tremaine all your life. We were all young together. Of course you want to see her. Simon, I wanted to see you weeks ago, but you wouldn't come.
Thank you. I prefer my own roof as long as I have one. What did you want to see me about?
A sermon.
A what?
A sermon. Well, you know what a sermon is, dear. About a month ago, I heard one.
I gather the occasion was unusual.
Well, I'm not a churchgoer, as you know, dear. I just worship nature. But when Jackie was going last month, I thought I would too. Well, I just thought I would. So I went, and there was a sermon.
Yes, there usually is. What was the text?
Well, I'm afraid I can't tell you that, dear. You see, remember as a child, one got into the habit of not listening. Well, I wasn't listening to this one. I was thinking about food. But I did suddenly, right at the end, hear him say something. He said, Simon, it was a common error to suppose that the passage of time made a bad action any less bad. He meant, don't you see, that because a thing had happened a long time ago, it doesn't make it any less base if it was base at the time. He meant that however long ago...
Yes, yes, I take the meaning perfectly. It's not so revolutionary an idea as you seem to think.
Oh, but I never had thought. Do you think it's true?
My dear Isabel, of course it's true.
Oh, dear. Oh, here, Humphrey and Jackie. Oh, Simon, don't you think they look rather sweet together? Shh, dear, don't tell me now.
I had no intention of telling you.
We picked the peas.
Oh, thank you, dear. Let me look.
There are more, but I was thinking of tomorrow.
Oh, dear, that doesn't look much for 5.
Well...
You mean 4?
Jackie, I believe we'll make these do. Then there'll be some for Sunday.
Oh? Is someone else expected?
Well, yes, dear. I've asked Tilly Cuff.
Tilly Cuff?
Humphrey, will you run into the pantry and fetch me a bowl, and then we'll shell the peas out here.
Tilly Cuff?
Any bowl?
Top shelf, right-hand side.
Tilly Cuff?
Oh, don't keep saying Tilly Cuff in that silly way, Simon. You know who Tilly Cuff is.
Why on earth should you ask her to dinner now?
Not just to dinner, dear. She's coming to stay.
To stay? You can't have seen her for years.
Oh, I haven't. Not since she left us in 1913. But we always send Christmas cards, and I wrote to her last address.
Why on earth should you ask?
Because I chose to. Oh.
Can't find it.
Oh, I'll come.
Well, here's Dora.
Oh, good. Humphrey, go and get some clothes on. And Jackie can bring the bowl. Oh, Dora, I am so glad to see you. And look who's here.
Simon. Well, well, well.
Good afternoon, Dora.
Simon Brocken. Well, you've aged.
Hmm?
I suppose it's living amongst all those deed boxes. My poor Simon.
None of us so young as we used to be.
True enough. I'm 56, but I hope I'm not petrified. Well.
Do you know what Dora does now, Simon? She's the receptionist at Madame Esme's beauty parlor.
Good, Dora.
And Madame Esme told me, she told me the last time I went in, Dora, that you're absolutely invaluable.
Oh, certainly I'm invaluable. I am the woman who never had a facial. I sit there in all my natural decrepitude, and after one look, our clients hasten to enroll for a course of tinting and massage.
And you know, Dora's got the dearest little flat over the ironmonger, Simon. It's perfectly delightful, and much more convenient than this.
Ah, well, if I've come down in the world, at least I came down with a walk.
We run like clockwork, Simon. It's quite wonderful. The pools are so good. We all do our part. There's never the least difficulty. We're going to make you so comfortable you'll never want to leave.
Mrs. Brockham. Oh, I'm so sorry. Mrs. Poole's just given notice.
Oh, dear. Why?
Oh, I think it's because of Miss Cuff.
Oh, well, perhaps I'd better come. I'm so sorry, Dora. Do forgive me.
Oh, certainly, at such a crisis. Simon and I will entertain our chums.
I'd better say to her, it's no good offering her more money. I mean, she'd only have to pay income tax. Oh, wouldn't she? I'll tell you what I said.
Simon.
Oh?
Isabel has something on her mind. I've noticed it for the last few weeks.
Women can be very trivial. Isabel has invited Tilly Cuff, if you remember the female, to come and stay. It's an obvious mistake, and I dare say she's now regretting
but
it.
Of course I remember Tilly. I remember her father.
My dear Dora, Tilly was an orphan.
My dear Simon, even orphans have had parents at some stage.
Oh.
Now, Tilly was the offspring of a bad hat and his housekeeper, who must have had a pretty bad bargain.
The Mad Hat, as you called him, was a cousin of Isabel's mother.
And when Tilly was orphaned and brought to live here, she had nothing but the clothes she stood up in. As Isabel's family feeling must be very strong.
Oh, that it's lain dormant a considerable time. She tells me she hasn't seen the woman since 1913.
That's when Tilly was packed off to Switzerland. Now, not that had enough of her. Damn it, she was a quiet, useful little thing. I don't see why Isabel should be in a fan tot over the prospect of seeing her again.
Well, I don't want to see her myself.
Old crab.
Oh.
I hope Tilly turns up frail and forlorn and charming, and I hope you lose your heart to her, and I hope she breaks it do you a power of good.
Dora. Dora, I wonder if you could say anything. Mrs. Poole is simply being unreasonable. She won't even listen to me.
Oh, not I, my dear. I'm no use for the modern domestic. I keep thinking they're paid to do as they're told.
Simon.
No business of mine.
Oh, I know it isn't, dear, but a man always has so much more authority. And the Pooles think so much of you.
Nonsense.
What would you do, dear? Mrs. Poole always remembers it was you who engaged her for me. Oh, please, Simon. Mrs. Poole, will you come out here a minute, please? Mr. Brocken wants to speak to you.
Oh, good afternoon, Mrs. Poole. I'm glad to see you again.
Thank you, sir.
You appear to have looked after this house admirably. It's agreeable to find one's first good impression so amply justified.
Yeah, Mrs. Poole.
Thank you, I'm sure.
But now, just as I pay my first visit here, just as your delightful small daughter has made me welcome, I learn that you wish to leave. Really upsets me.
Well, I'm sure we don't want to put you out, sir. Mm-hmm. But
tell me your reason.
Well, you never know.
You never know what?
Well, you can't tell. Another lady in the place. Well, you never know, do you?
Nonsense. I'm sure Mrs. Brockett and Miss Brown have never been other than helpful.
That's right, sir. They're...
And then a third lady will no doubt lighten your work still further. Aren't you comfortable here?
Oh, yes, sir. I didn't mean to suggest that... Well... It's just that we don't like the idea of a change.
Well, if that's all, to oblige me, Mrs. Poole, reconsider your decision. See how things turn out.
Okay. If you say so. We'll have a try.
That's right. Thank you. I'm sure that's the best plan. Just have a try.
Okay.
Well, there's something in being a lawyer after all.
Simon, you were wonderful.
Oh, the woman merely wanted handling.
It was an impressive spectacle. Isabel, I must go. What time does Tilly arrive?
Oh, dear. Quite soon.
No, don't bother to see me off, dear. I know my way. Bye-bye.
Oh.
Isabel, how long have you asked this woman to stay?
If you mean Tilly Cuff.
Naturally, I mean Tilly Cuff. How long do you expect her to stay?
As long as she likes, dear.
My dear Isabel, you have a most commendably kind heart, but in this case it has led you astray. Now, I suggest that the moment she arrives, you should make it quite clear she isn't expected to stay longer than a week.
Oh, I couldn't do that, dear. I couldn't really.
What beats me is why you ever looked her up again at all. No one's particularly fond of her. No one wants her here.
Oh, dear.
Oh, good heavens, what's the matter? I merely made an observation.
No, it's not that, dear. It's not that at all.
Then what the deuce is it?
Well, I shall be glad to tell you, Simon, if you'll stop walking about.
Oh, all right.
And sit down and don't shout
yes,
at me.
Yes, my dear.
You know, Simon, I've always tried to do my duty.
You had a sound upbringing.
Oh, thank you, dear. So had you, and you've kept it up so. That's why I wanted to ask you about the sermon.
Sermon? What sermon?
The one about the passage of time.
Oh, yes.
The passage of time, not making a bad action any less bad. I hope you might explain it away. Because you see, Simon, I did once, a long time ago, do a base act.
How long ago?
More than 30 years.
Oh. Then if it has produced no consequences so far, there is obviously nothing to worry about.
Oh, but it has, dear. It has produced consequences. You must let me tell you, Simon, you really must. Do you remember, just before the last war, and Mr. McGregor? He was a subaltern in the Gunners, a friend of Mark's, and he stayed with you on one of his leaves and came to one of our dances.
Oh, I have a vague recollection of him.
He was wonderfully good-looking.
I don't remember that.
No, perhaps not, dear, but he was. He was fascinating. He stayed with you a week. It was in the spring of 1913, and we saw him nearly every day.
You sound as though you'd been in love with the fellow.
Yes, I was.
Huh?
That's my only excuse. I was 19, and I fell in love with him, and I thought he was in love with me. I dare say I was very vain in those days, but I was pretty, wasn't I?
Well, you weren't bad looking.
And when he came to see us every day and really paid me a great deal of attention, I don't think I was so unreasonable. The only thing was, the time was so short and he was so shy, I thought he might be afraid of Papa. I mean, I thought he couldn't screw himself up.
Ah, probably it had to penny.
Oh, is he head there? His father was McGregor's oatmeal biscuits, so I knew it wasn't that. But it might have been lack of opportunity, because, you see, I never could get rid of you and Mark. Well, the day before he left, one of the maids told me he'd been over before breakfast by himself and waited about half an hour in the stables looking at the horses and then went off again.
Well,
of course, I remember telling him that I often went out early, though that day I hadn't, so you can imagine how furious I was. But the morning after, the last morning of all, I was down at 6:30. Oh, it was a beautiful morning. The maids were all in the kitchen, but they pulled the blinds up, and the hall was full of sunshine. It seemed to go to my head. I felt absolutely certain he was coming to propose to me. So I went to open the front door, and there in the box was a letter. Mr. McGregor had come even earlier than I'd expected. I knew the writing was his, because he'd written in our albums. Only the letter wasn't for me. It was addressed to Tilly. I couldn't believe it. You remember your big grey envelope, Simon? You know the paper was so good and stiff, the gum scarcely held. Well, without meaning to, the flap came away so easily, I found myself opening it. I opened it, and I read the letter. It was a proposal of marriage. He asked her to marry him. Couldn't believe it.
I can't believe it either. He'd hardly seen the girl.
Well, I suppose he saw her every time he saw us. But it's quite true, Simon. Here's the letter.
What? You kept it?
Well, it didn't really belong to me, did it, Simon? So I couldn't destroy it. It begins, "My dearest Miss Cuff, your modesty and shyness make it difficult to speak to you, especially among so many people. I do not even know whether you regard me with liking. Even as I write, I fear I may be frightening you. So timid and sweet and gentle, my gentle lass.
Good heavens.
Let me plainly ask whether you could ever consent to be my wife. We are all coming up after breakfast to say goodbye. If you can give me the least encouragement by word or look, I will at once speak to your guardian. If not, you need not fear I shall trouble you again. Believe me, dearest Miss Cuff, your devoted Ian McGregor."
God bless my soul.
Yes, that's just how I felt. But no one ever fell in love with Tilly, not even curates. I thought perhaps it was a joke.
Well, what happened?
I went upstairs again, and there was Tilly coming down. I thought, oh, how dreadful it would be if she made a fool of herself, accidentally, you know, by putting herself forward in any way, when you and Mr. McGregor came. I thought that you might make fun of her. Yes, I know, dear, but that's what I thought. Or rather, that's what I made myself think. So I said, oh, by the way, Tilly, Mr. McGregor's coming after breakfast to say goodbye, and you must give him a last chance to flirt with you, too. And then I went upstairs. And, of course, when you all came, Tilly simply wouldn't speak to him, and he just went away.
You behaved very badly.
Yes, dear, I know.
What did you hope to gain by it?
Well, I thought, after Tilly had gone, I thought perhaps Mr. McGregor would come back and stay with you again and really fall in love with me.
Well, he didn't. So you'd probably made no impression on him at all. You merely deprived Tilly of a possible husband. However, you have now relieved your mind. You'd better forget the whole business.
Oh, but I can't. Not since I heard that sermon. I mean, I must do something. That's why I've asked Tilly.
So I now perceive. I still think it a mistake. The damage is done, my dear Isabel. It was done 35 years ago.
But, dear, the passage of time...
Yes, I know, and I've said I agree with you. The point is, there is now no action you can take. Good heavens! Humphrey, how long have you been there?
About 5 minutes.
Isabel, do you realize this nephew of yours has probably heard every word you've been saying?
Well, I don't mind. It saves me telling it twice. Don't you think I'm right, Humphrey?
There can be no argument.
You see, Simon, young people are so much cleverer than we are.
Oh, then you'd better consult Miss Brown as well.
But as a matter of fact, dear, I told Jackie yesterday...
Well, had I known, my dear Isabel, that you were merely seeking a wider audience, I should not have wasted my time listening to you. However, as I have done so, I will repeat what I said earlier. To offer Tilly Cuff a month's holiday as amends for a frustrated life is simply insulting to her and a nuisance to me. So, as you cannot now put her off, at least cut her visit short.
But of course a month's holiday wouldn't be enough, Simon. What I'm afraid I'll have to do, only you wouldn't let me tell you. Oh, come along, Jackie. We'll shell the peas here.
Isabel, for once, I should like to hear the end of a sentence you have left unfinished.
Oh, yes, of course, dear, but I can talk just as well while I'm shelling peas. What I was going to say was, I'm afraid I'll have to give Tilly all my money.
Nonsense!
No, it isn't nonsense at all, dear. I have defrauded Tilly, and now I must try, as you say, to make amends. If it hadn't been for my wickedness... Tilly would be Mr. McGregor's wife.
One moment. Would you mind telling us upon what, after giving away your income, you propose to live yourself?
Oh, I shall manage. Well, how did Dora manage when she lost all her money?
Dora, where is she now? Behind a counter in one shop, living in rooms over another.
Oh, well, perhaps I could live there, too. I shouldn't at all mind living with Dora. She's so cheerful. If I kept just 100 a year, and two can live as cheaply as one... Oh, is that a horse and a sparrow? Oh, Dora is rather horse-like. We might do very well. 100 years, all that Dora has.
What you rather forget is that Dora is also paid by Madame Esme to advertise her decrepitude.
Oh, dear, you know she isn't. That's just Dora's amusing way of putting things. Dora enjoys herself there.
Whether Dora enjoys herself or not is beside the point. Isabel, listen to me. You have an income of roughly, what, 800 a year? Representing a capital of about 40,000. I cannot imagine it is the capital you're intending to give away.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh.
But, good gracious, why not? I've finished my life. What becomes of me doesn't matter.
It does to me. I could hardly see you, for example, in the workhouse.
Yes, I know what you mean, dear, because my name is the same as yours.
Ah, the whole thing's preposterous. You can't do it.
Oh, yes, I can. It's my money. Mark explained all about it.
You still can't do it.
Why? Wouldn't it be legal?
Yes, damn it, it would be legal, but it's insane. And Mark must have been insane himself to leave such a will. Good heavens, to give all your money away without the slightest written obligation?
Well, I said I might keep 100 a year. and I shall live with Dora. Oh, yes, and that's another thing I thought of. This house. I was going to leave Humphrey 5,000. Now, of course, I shan't be able to. But if you like this house, Humphrey, I shan't give it to Tilly. I shall give it to you.
Well, thank you very much, Aunt Isabel. There's nothing I'd like better.
I'm so glad.
Nonsense. He doesn't want the place. What did he do with it?
I should live in it, sir.
Thought you were going back to New Zealand.
I reckon not.
Isabel, without prejudice, when do you intend to make Tilly Cuff this absurd proposal?
Well, as soon as she gets here, dear. Well, as soon as she's had dinner. What time is it?
Isabel, let me ask you one favor. Say nothing to Miss Cuff for at least a few days.
Oh, but why, Simon? I want to get it over.
Tilly will hardly be flattered to find her invitation merely a new way to pay old debts.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean.
Yes.
But I shouldn't have asked her, you know, if she hadn't been on my conscience.
Are you sure? If you'd thought of her and guessed she needed a holiday.
Well, I might have, dear. I hope I should.
Then let Tilly Cuff come here for a pleasant vacation. My dear Isabel, when you tell Miss Cuff, as I know you are determined to do, of your really very reprehensible act, let there be a friendly atmosphere to soften the blow. Oh, I'm not thinking so much of yourself as of Tilly. Let her feel first that we're all well disposed to her.
The old fox.
Very well, Simon, just to please you. Now, I really must go in, but you can stay here, all of you, ready to make Tilly welcome.
I don't believe a word of it.
I do.
Well, at least it's an interesting situation.
Even you do not seem wholly enthusiastic.
As far as I can see, Miss Cuff simply lived on her rich relations. Pure parasite. Oh, I'm not blaming her. In 1913, I reckon there wasn't much else for her to do, but the fact remains she was a pure parasite.
Are you a communist by any chance?
I don't know. I've certainly no use for the social system of 1913.
It was the best system that ever existed. I look back to 1913 as the highest point of civilization from which we have been steadily retrogressing ever since. That's beside the point. The point we have to deal with is your aunt's extraordinary aberration.
Well, why do you call it an aberration?
Well, because the whole thing...
Because it really is.
No, it isn't. I think myself, Mr. McGregor must have been a muff and Tilly a rabbit, but it was a tragedy for her all the same, and what Mrs. Brocken's trying to do now isn't crackers at all. She's going to tell, you know. She's going to tell Tilly Cuff what she did. Because you can't put everything right, that's no reason for not doing what you can. It's a matter of integrity.
We seem to have landed in company beyond our moral station.
Something should perhaps be done for Miss Cuff. Isabel might even make her a small allowance, but as for giving up her capital, it's insane. What, Tilly wouldn't take it?
Is she a high moral character, too?
I don't know. I know practically nothing about her. She was a very quiet little thing, and very properly. But if Isabel put such an opportunity in her way, the temptation will naturally be great.
I bet the padre would have been pleased.
Padre? What padre?
Well, the parson, sir. The bloke who preached. It can't be often that a sermon produces such a striking effect.
Oh, very fortunately.
No, but they should, you know. Personally, I think that's the most remarkable feature of the whole show, that Aunt Isabel went to church, heard what the parson told her, and then went home and did it.
What are you grinning at?
Well, it just struck me.
Well?
If you're still looking for the old-fashioned conscientiousness and the old-fashioned integrity, I reckon you found it.
I think I heard the taxi.
Oh, 0 hour approaches.
Tilly, here. Oh,
this is nice. Here.
Yes, isn't it a wonderful thing? Yes. Here's Tilly. Here's Miss Cuff.
Holy cow.
Tilly, this is my nephew Humphrey, Ruth's boy. And Miss Brown, too, who helps us all. And Simon, who, of course, you know.
Simon! Oh, after all these years, oh, how perfectly ripping to see you.
Yes, it's a great pleasure after, as you say, a long time.
Oh, and Ruth's boy. Oh, it doesn't seem possible, and yet I believe I should have known you. Oh, what a topper she was.
And still is.
Oh, to think I wasn't at her wedding. But there, that's life. The best of friends must part. And he sent me a piece of cake. It followed me half round Europe, and when it arrived, I thought it was insect powder. But still, I was so glad to know I'd been remembered.
Well, you travelled about so much, I was never very sure of your address.
Yes, indeed, I'm quite a walking Baedeker. That's one advantage of my chequered career. I suppose there isn't a good hotel in Switzerland where I haven't stayed at one time or another. If anyone here needs a first-rate courier, just apply to Little Tilly.
cigarette, Miss Cuff, or don't you smoke?
Oh, yes, indeed, dear boy. I'd be lost without my fags. Oh, thank you. Goody, goody. Oh, yes, I've traveled all over Europe, so lucky. Of course, some of my posts have been comparatively dull. Oh, I dare say some people might find them so. Personally, I'm never dull. So long as there's the least human interest, just one human being who needs my little mite of friendship, I am perfectly content. I take such an interest in people. As Lady Plummer once said to me, it's the gloomy corners that need the ray of sunlight, dear Lady Plummer. I said, oh, this isn't a gloomy corner, and indeed it wasn't. Five servants, and she bore her asthma most gallantly. Here, of course, I shall have no scope at all. Oh, it's such a cheerful house.
Yes, wasn't it?
Oh, what times we used to have, Issy dear, you and Mark and Simon and I. Oh, poor Mark. Oh, what a blow. Ah, there, perhaps I may bring a little comfort. We must have long talks. Your letter was a perfect godsend, dear. For certain I was with the feelings, dear Lady Plummer had written once again, would I go to Jamaica with her? Poor little Tilly didn't know what to do. But Issy's letter cut the Gordian knot. My cousin needs me, I said. And after all, family ties come first. To Issy, I must go.
Is she coming in here?
She's gone down the garden. Oh, look here, sir. You persuaded Aunt Isabel to wait, and she has waited. We've had 2 weeks of the woman.
Hark!
Oh, it's no one.
We've no business in here, you know. The winter garden's supposed to be the pool's private stamping ground.
I refuse to spend the entire weekend in my bedroom. Oh, Miss Brown, we shan't disturb you. I note it never strikes Miss Cuff to offer a little domestic assistance.
Oh, I'm not overworked.
Well, Jackie likes work. She won't come to the flicks in case her brain isn't clear enough next morning to cook the inevitable kippers.
I didn't want to see the film.
Well, it was jolly good.
Well, if you like idiotic musicals.
I have a passion for them. Hmm. But then I'm just a rough, ignorant colonial.
A point has just struck me. Do you realize that we are absolutely in the dark as to Miss Cuff's feelings for the chap? She may not have wanted to marry him. If that could be established, your aunt's whole preposterous scheme falls to the ground.
Well, personally, I live for the moment when Aunt Isabel is going to whip that letter out of her handbag and tell Tilly all.
What?
It's quite true. Mrs. Brocken thinks if she gave Tilly the letter to read, it would save a great deal of explanation.
Good heavens.
Personally, I'm all for it. If Aunt Isabel really means to pay Tilly off, the sooner she does it, the better. Because the woman is getting on all our nerves. The unfortunate pools are in a state of panic because she wants to send Greta to school.
One moment. I'm just as eager as you are to get rid of Miss Cuff's company, but the idea of paying her off is extremely repugnant. I'm trusting that a fuller knowledge of Miss Cuff's character will convince my sister-in-law that magnanimity is out of place.
Do you mean you hope Mrs. Brocken will get to hate her?
I mean Mrs. Brocken will see through her.
There've been no signs of it so far.
Naturally. Your aunt has just achieved a remarkable feat. She put together an ill-judged phrase in a sermon and her own shabby treatment of Tilly Cuff and then took action. We cannot expect any further mental activity for some time.
But what does it matter whether Mrs. Brocken sees through Miss Cuff or not? She's not going to give her money to Tilly because she likes her.
I only hope no one is going to encourage Mrs. Brocken in her natural impulsiveness.
If you mean me, I shan't mention the subject again.
Oh, certainly not, sir. Jackie knows her place. Oh, for heaven's sake, stop behaving like a companion. Mm.
Reverting to the pools. There is at least no reason why they should take alarm. Miss Cuff can't send the child to school against her will.
You underrate their simplicity, sir. The Pools don't reason, they just feel. Did you know Mrs. Poole had a husband?
Oh, she told me she was a widow and I accepted the convention. I don't know now how Miss Cuff penetrated it.
Rather cunningly, sir. She happened along when Jackie and I were washing up for the Pools.
Oh, Mrs. Poole, says Tilly. I've just seen your husband.
And the fool of a woman said where? It was a complete giveaway.
Had Miss Cuff, in fact, seen him?
No, she was being funny. At least that's what she said. Mrs. Poole just looks sick. And that's the woman you stick up for.
I don't. It's the principal. Oh, you saw it yourself to begin with.
Well, now I've seen Tilly Cuff, and in my opinion,
you can...
Take care.
Cooey! Isn't that what they say in Wagga Wagga? I couldn't imagine where you'd all got to. No one in the drawing room, no one on the terrace. I cooeed all down the garden. I hope you weren't hiding from me.
I had, in fact, just inquired your whereabouts.
This is where I always do odd jobs.
Oh, busy hands, never idle. But doesn't someone want to help you? I'm sure he does.
Oh, this won't take long.
Nonsense. Humphrey, come and do your good deed for the day. Simon, I'm sure you're not comfortable. Why don't we old folk go out on the terrace?
Thank you. I prefer to remain where I am.
Then I'll keep you company. Lackaday, what a change. What a change. This place used to be so full of blues, we called it our little fairyland, didn't we, old fellow?
Oh.
And now there are only greeters geraniums. It is rather sad.
It's probably lousy with earwigs.
You know, Simon, I've been wanting to say this ever since I came. It's your being here makes this house seem really like home to me.
Is the Boer extinct?
It's a myth.
This crossword chap's getting inaccurate.
You do too many of those crosswords, Simon. You'll try your eyes.
Oh, so this is where you've all got to. Daughter's coming to dinner. She just telephoned to ask if we could have her, and I said, of course. It's Mrs. Poole's night out. Now, isn't that nice?
Well, I'll be delighted to see the old battle axe.
Yes, and so will Tilly, but it is hardly seen her.
Well, my dears, to be frank, I think Dora's avoiding me. Oh, poor Dora was always a little jealous. And now she sees how very much better I've worn than she has. Oh, well, perhaps it's only natural.
I hope there's enough.
Oh, my dear, stew always goes round. Now, whatever are you all in here? It's not a bit comfortable.
Simon and I are reviving old memories, flowers and lights and music.
Yes, didn't it look pretty when we gave a dance?
And what ripping little hops they wear. Do you remember sitting out on the stairs, Simon, eating ices?
No.
Oh, it was topping. And there were all sorts of rules. On the first flight, it was quite proper, and on the second, as far as a turn. But after the turn, where one couldn't be seen from below, it was rather fast. What dear little innocents we were.
Where did you and Mama sit, Aunt Isabel? Above or below?
Oh, below, of course, dear. Well, we were hostesses.
Of course, we three were always in full view and very decorative, too. We were known as the Three Graces. Don't you remember, Isabel, at that last dance before I went to Switzerland? We were standing under the chandelier waiting for our guests when the band leader suddenly raised his glass to us. To the Three Graces.
Yes, I dare say he did, dear. I know Papa always gave him a glass of wine before he started. I remember that dance very well.
Mark and I brought a friend with us, a man called McGregor.
McGregor? Oh, I don't remember him.
Ah.
Switzerland must be heaven. Did you ski?
My dear, our companions don't ski. Mrs. Williamson never let me out of her sight. She went to Switzerland to die, you know, or didn't you know? I dare say not. I was rather young for the responsibility, but she died in 1915. And fortunately, I got a post as governess in Bern. They were short of English governesses just then.
Yes, I know you got about a good deal.
Next, I went to Paris. La Ville Lumière. Ha, ha, ha. I taught English, music, and elocution to the three daughters of a professor of geology in the Rue Vaugirard. Your mother would have been quite pleased, Isabel. We were so respectable. When the last of them married, I came home.
I should have thought that an Englishwoman with your abilities would have found more scope abroad.
Odd as it may seem, I wanted to come home. Even governesses share some of the normal emotions. I'd been away nearly 15 years, so I came home and found governesses were quite gone out. The families who could have afforded them sent their daughters to boarding school instead. Well, I suppose it made for quiet in the home. But there were always the sick and the elderly and the people their relatives didn't want. So I made a new niche for myself.
Tilly.
Isabel.
Oh, Jackie looks quite upset. But I assure you, dear, a companion's life has many compensations. One always feels needed. What would Issy do without you? Oh, and I'm sure, Jackie, you're very lucky to have found such a good post. When I take wing again...
Put it away.
I only hope I may be as fortunate.
She doesn't remember him.
But of course she says she doesn't.
But...
What? Oh, of course, I'm not so young as I used to be, but so long as one doesn't look more than 30, people don't ask, so I mean to stay 30 for years.
Jimmy, this letter...
Oh, Lord, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Aunt Isabel, I am a clumsy clot.
Really, what carelessness. Oh, what a mess.
Well, I'll sweep it up. Poor Greta, it's her geranium.
I can't think why you allow the Pools to use this place at all. Surely the kitchen's enough for them. There, of course, they make one feel an absolute intruder. Whenever I go in, I notice it.
Then please don't go in, Tilly. I never do myself, and I'm sure I asked you not to either, because the Pools like to be left alone.
Well, I find it difficult to neglect an obvious duty.
Oh.
What's that? My dear Isabel, I know I'm no one here, but I can't see you neglecting an obvious duty without speaking of it. That child's being ruined. She's as ignorant as a little savage. Another year at school, preferably boarding school, might be the saving of her. It wouldn't cost so much.
Well, I'm not thinking of the money. I'm thinking of Mrs. Poole, who wants Greta with her.
Exactly. Mothers of that class always are possessive. I dare say Greta's father would take a longer view.
Well, I don't want to discuss it now. Jackie, if there are any more beans, I think we'd better pick them. Dora, you know.
There aren't, but there are lettuces. I could make a salad.
Humphrey, dear, will you go down to the garden and cut any lettuces that are nice? The meat's going to be a little short.
It always is.
Well, I haven't noticed.
Well, you wouldn't, dear boy, for the simple reason that Isabel always gives you twice your share.
Oh,
and
Kelly,
I must say, while we're on the subject, it's your own fault, Issy. The butcher here has known you for years. Don't tell me he can't slip you an extra ration.
Oh, but I've never asked him to. I don't ask him, Tilly.
Well, everyone else does.
We get enough to eat.
Only just. And don't start talking to me about Germany, because what I say is, who won the war?
We won it.
Well, it doesn't seem like it. It certainly doesn't seem like it the way we live.
If we hadn't won it, I reckon I shouldn't be here. I should be either dead or slave labor. So would Jackie. Aunt Isabel would die of starvation, and Uncle Simon would undoubtedly get himself shot. So we, even living as we are, rightly prefer to have won. But, of course, I can't judge for you.
Humphrey, dear.
Oh, I don't mind. I ask no apology. Everyone knew the army wasted half its rations.
We did not.
Quite possibly,
I'm sorry, but in our unit...
Women are always more conscientious. But we all know what the men did. Drew extra rations and then kept pigs.
I'm going back to my office.
But, Simon, dear, it's Saturday night.
I shall sleep on two chairs and dine at the club.
Can you give me a shakedown on the floor, sir?
Humphrey, now that I will not have with Dora coming to dinner, to be so silly.
I'm sorry. Well, come on, Jackie. Leave those beans and help me forage.
I've got to finish these, then I must change.
Okay.
Simon, I'm sorry you've been interrupted in your crossword, but please don't talk of going.
I hope I may not be compelled to such a call.
Oh, dear. Now he'll go and shut himself in the bathroom and I shan't be able to speak to him. Simon!
What do you want to say?
Oh, nothing in particular, dear. Simon!
Well, what a storm in a teacup. I've never known such a house for bickering.
We used not to bicker.
At least you and I are pals, aren't we, dear? I hope you were right not to go when Humphrey asked you.
Good heavens, he can cut a lettuce by himself.
You know what I mean, dear? You didn't go to the cinema last night either.
Miss Cuff, I'd really rather not talk about it, because there's nothing to talk about. I didn't go to the cinema because I didn't want to see the film.
Very well, dear, very well. You mustn't be offended.
I'm not offended.
I naturally take an interest in you because, well, you and I are very much in the same boat.
Oh, really?
Oh, I don't say that Isabel treats you badly. Though, of course, you're shockingly overworked.
I don't think so. The 6 weeks I've been here were the happiest I've ever had.
6 weeks. Oh, 6 weeks. My dear, I liked this place, too, when I first came here. My word, I thought I'd fallen on my feet. But it's wonderful how people change once they've got used to you. I used to do that, too. I wasn't supposed to help in the kitchen, but it was wonderful what little duties came my way. Slice the beans, shell the peas.
Shelling peas is rather a nice job.
Yes, that's what they used to say. Such a nice little job. Let's all do it together. And then we'd just get started when someone would come for Miss Ruth, and Miss Isabel was wanted to go calling, and I'd be left to finish alone. Do you wash the dog, dear?
I have done.
So did I, and a messy business it was. But it isn't our dog. He's Isabel's. Why
shouldn't she wash them herself?
Mrs. Brocken pays me, you know.
That's right, dear, that's right. Always remember that. Don't make the mistake I did and think it's being put down to your good nature. A companion can't be considered good-natured, because whatever she does, her employer regards it as paid for. That's £30 a year.
Is that all?
Oh, my dear, it's very rarely that I've accepted 30. It's the tipping that's so tiresome. In hotels, you know. The waiters look at one. It's so unfair. Other women get away with 5 shillings when it ought at least to be 10. Simply because they're Mrs. This or Lady That, and everyone knows who they are. Yes, you're young and pretty. It's when you get older you need... You so desperately need someone who knows you. And that's why you should be so careful never to miss your chance. I believe you ought at least to have gone to the cinema with him.
A week ago, you were warning me not to make myself cheap.
I know, dear, I know. Because though a young man may amuse himself, a companion may not. It's the fatal mistake. But I'll tell you what I think now. Isabel is so simple-minded. I believe that if Humphrey really engaged one of her companion's affections, Isabel would take the girl's part. I don't believe she'd make any objections to their marrying. And that's important because it's Isabel who has the money. And his people are too far off to interfere. You might quite well catch him.
Miss Cuff, I've said before, there's no question.
Nonsense, child. You needn't pretend with me. I know a girl's got to be careful. She can't afford to take risks because, naturally, well, if a young man goes to his people and says he's going to marry a girl no one's heard of, a girl without a penny, well, naturally they won't be pleased. And even if there's a very strong reason, they'll try to get him out of it. But Isabel's such a fool.
There, that's done.
I believe you're blushing.
I'm going to change now.
Has he ever asked you to kiss him?
Miss Cuff, will you mind your own business?
Well, I was...
I have here... Oh, where's Mrs. Brocken?
She's looking for you. She thought you'd be in the bathroom.
Well, I was not. I was in the cellar. We have here a Latour and a Beaujolais. Oh. You give me a couple of decanters, I'll see if they're still drinkable.
Well, Simon, dear, things are looking up. Well, I shall change too. I've a little black number, as the girls say. Rather beguiling. Toodaloo.
Oh, Toodaloo. That's the creature. That's the woman to whom my sister-in-law proposed to make over a fortune. However, I think we see daylight.
Oh, Mr. Brocken, isn't it dreadful when dreadful people tell you the truth?
What? I may need a piece of clean linen.
What may be the truth? Only, how can one tell? I'm sorry. What did you say?
I was asking for a piece of clean linen. However, never mind. My handkerchief may serve.
The glasses are all over there. If you'll tell me which ones, when I come down, I'll put them on the table. I say.
Well, Greta, what do you want?
Would you like to see something?
No.
Oh, come on. I've got a surprise for you. Miss Brown's seen her, but no one else has. Mum! Come in here, Mum!
Where are you, love?
In here. It's all right. It's only him. There.
Oh.
Doesn't she look smashing?
Mr. Brocken don't know me.
Oh, to be frank, I did not. Great Scott.
I did want you to see her in evening dress. She's going dancing at the Pally with her friend. Doesn't she look smashing?
Smashing indeed.
It was Greta made it for me. She's ever so handy with her needle.
Here, you know what I think? I think Mum ought to be on the movies.
No doubt she would have been a great success. However, her present occupation is perhaps less hazardous. Your mother's quite happy where she is. Eh, Mrs. Poole?
I don't know. We was happy. We've liked it here ever so. Haven't we, love?
Mm. Especially before they all came.
Well, when the house was empty, you naturally had less work. But you still receive every consideration.
Well, what's that Miss Cuff want to send Greta to school for?
Good heavens, I've no idea. In any case, she can't, so don't worry.
She said there was an act about it.
The act Miss Cuff referred to is the Education Act, not yet in force. It won't touch Greta, which is probably a pity. If you were both of you better educated, you might at least understand the laws of your own land.
We don't want nothing to do with the law at all. It's better to keep clear of it.
My good woman, the law is to protect you and guide you. It's nothing to be afraid of.
Well, Greta isn't afraid of policemen. No. I was when I was a kiddie, but Great as not. She asked him the why and everything.
Yeah, I ask him the time. If you want to know the time, ask a policeman.
If you want to know the time, ask a policeman.
Mum sing nice, eh?
Get along with you. You see, Greta and me, well, you might say we're all in all to each other.
That's right.
All we want is to be left in peace.
The universal human desire, the pathetic human hope. Don't worry, Mrs. Poole. Greta's in no danger. Just put the whole thing out of your mind.
Thank you, sir.
There, ma'am. Here, if you want to see a smashing car, just nip out before your dinner and look by the back gates.
My friend's in the business. I'll be back before 12, and Greta's got her books.
I got film frolic and film fancies and film photo and a bag of all sorts. Oh, boy!
Good night, sir.
Good night.
Good night, Lita! Don't let...
Greta, carry those beans in for Miss Brown.
Right,
and you might put them on while you're about it.
Really?
Simon, are you playing hide-and-seek with me? I thought you were upstairs.
I've been in the cellar.
Simon, I must talk to you. You asked me to wait, and I've waited. But I think it's been long enough.
Well?
You know, I've thought and thought. I can't help everything being so mixed up. If only I could get to know Tilly again. I mean, if only we understood her better. I can't believe she's as bad as you make out.
She's already destroyed the comfort of this household. Why are we assembled now in this dilapidated tool shed?
Well, if Tilly thought you all extremely rude dodging her so, I really couldn't blame her.
Not a question of manners. It's a question of self-preservation.
Oh, well, I don't understand you. I really don't. I think we'd better not talk about it anymore.
All right. I'll deal with the wine tomorrow.
Oh, dear. Oh, my dearest Miss Cuff. Your modesty and shyness make it difficult to speak to you, especially among so many people. I will at once speak to Mr. Massey. If not, you need not fear I shall trouble you again. Believe me, dearest Miss Cuff, your devoted Ian McGregor. Oh, dear.
Voila!
Tilly! That dress.
French, of course. Lady Plummer. Much too young for her, but I think it suits me.
Oh, you look beautiful. Oh, Tilly, dear, what a long time it is since we were young.
Well, there is a difference in our ages, you know. And I didn't often outshine you, did I, Isabel?
Dora won't be here just yet, so let's sit for a few minutes and be comfortable together.
Certainly.
Tilly. I've been very selfish.
Is that why you asked me to stay here? Because I was on your conscience?
Oh, no, no, of course not. I just thought it'd be nice to see you again. At least...
I wondered when I got your letter. First, I thought you couldn't get any help. Then when I came here and found Jackie in the pools, I wondered again. However, I'm glad you just thought it would be nice to see me. Is it?
Well, I'm sure it would be if we could find each other again. You see, you've changed so, Tilly. I suppose I have too, but we seem almost like strangers. I feel we've got to know each other all over again.
Oh, you've had an easy life and I've had a hard one.
Yes, dear, I know that, but I don't think it ought to make you hate me.
My dear Issy, of course I don't hate you. I don't hate anyone.
You mean companions can't afford to. Oh, dear.
I owe your family a deep debt of gratitude and I never forget favors. Has anyone been saying things behind my back?
Oh, no, of course not. Why, who would?
Well, I thought Jackie might have said something, or Simon. You don't know the slyness and jealousy one has to guard against. If anyone here says they've heard me utter a word against you, they're not speaking the truth.
But Tilly, no one has. I'm your friend. Well, we used to get on so well together. We used to have such a good time, didn't we? Surely you haven't forgotten everything.
Your mother was good to me.
Yes, I wondered how much you remembered her.
I remember when she came to fetch me from Bournemouth. She was wearing a sealskin jacket. I'd never seen one before. Not to touch. I've still got it.
No.
She gave it to me when it got the moss. Of course, it isn't worth anything.
Do you know, there are still some things of hers in a box upstairs. We could go through them together. I hadn't realized that you were so fond of her, Tilly.
She came the day after the funeral. I was sitting in the basement. All the other rooms were let, and I hadn't a right to be there even because we owed the landlord rent.
Oh.
Your mother drove up in a cab.
Oh, my dear, how dreadful it must have been for you.
I was 16. It was dreadful.
And then you came here and made your home with us. Oh, how right Mama was to bring you.
She said you're to come and be our little cousin. I thought she was an angel.
Oh, I'm so glad you've told me. It makes me able to, to recognize you again. I knew I was right. Only I'm so used to be guided by Simon. Tilly, do you think I'm a fool?
Oh, certainly not, dear. But if you want my advice, go on letting Simon guide you.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, Tilly. I said, really, that's very funny. I shall tell Simon what you said. Oh, dear.
Well, I'm glad I made a joke. Personally, I don't see it.
Well, you will soon. Oh, dear.
Oh, yes, you always laughed easily. Well, it's one way of attracting the men.
Well, there are other ways, too, Tilly. By being quiet and modest and unassuming. That's what some men look for and fall in love with.
I brought up a bottle of sherry.
Oh, good, dear. Look at Tilly's dress.
I can't take my eyes off it.
Chic, eh?
Smashing. Where's Dora?
She isn't here yet. Tilly, why don't you go and look out for her?
Certainly, dear.
Humphrey, I must ask you to behave more nicely to Tilly. It's no good saying smashing if you make it sound like a swear word.
I had no idea my elocution was so good.
Tilly is far more sensitive than you think. We've just had a really nice talk.
Yes, I reckon she'd been bamboozling you. Aunt Isabel, for heaven's sake, I don't want to be awkward. I just don't want to see you get hurt.
But good gracious me, Tilly won't hurt me. But why should she want to when I'm going to give her so much?
If you let an animal out of a trap, it oughtn't to want to bite you. But sometimes it does.
Oh, my dear boy.
Yes, Dora.
Good evening, Isabel. And what are you all doing in here?
Dora, I'm sure I don't know.
Next week you'll probably find us in the attics.
Well, you won't find me in the attics. You'll find me in the cellar. Sherry, Dora?
Yes, thank you, I will.
But where's Tilly? She went out to meet you, wasn't she, on the terrace?
No, not when I came up.
Sorry I'm late. Oh, hello, Miss Tremaine.
Good evening, my dear. You look a bit peaky. Is it all overworking you?
No, of course not.
Come in for one of our 10-bob facials.
But I wonder where Tilly is. I do hope she didn't go round to the kitchen.
My dear Isabel, since we are for once free of the woman's presence, let us make the most of the respite.
Here, here.
And give Miss Brown a sherry.
Dear me, I remember sitting out here at your dances. Isabel was a very good hostess. She always saw I had partners. It wasn't easy, was it, dear?
Oh, I don't know.
No, my poor mother believed in girls looking girlish, with the result that I looked like a giraffe tied up in pink ribbons. And Simon used to look like a mute at a first-class funeral.
Oh.
Would you be 20 again, Simon?
Certainly not.
No, would I. These youngsters must think we're mad.
I don't. One can make such a fool of oneself when one's young.
How right you are, darling.
I'd be young again. Oh, how nice it is to sit quietly and talk over old times. Sometimes there'd be 8 or 9 of us out, and we used to meet at the pond. What was that?
It sounds like Tilly again.
Isabel! Isabel, will you kindly see if you can get this child to answer you? There's something very wrong going on in this house, and I need to get to the bottom of it.
Whatever's the matter?
I have just seen a woman in the most flashy evening dress, going out of the back gate with a man. Well, I naturally ran round to the kitchen to question Mrs. Poole. Mrs. Poole isn't there, and Greta here appears to be struck dumb.
I don't suppose she knows anything about
it. Oh, yes, she does.
It was probably Mrs. Poole you saw.
Well, don't you speak to me. And why should Mrs. Poole be in evening dress?
To go dancing at the Palais.
What's wrong with that?
If there's nothing wrong about it, why didn't you tell me yourself?
Greta doesn't like being shouted at, and it's Mrs. Poole's evening out.
Well, you all seem to be a great deal better informed than I am, and I must say that
Greta. I have no doubt it was your mother, and that she was accompanied, as usual, by her friend. And I have no doubt she looks extremely well, and is going to have a very pleasant evening. Now run back to your play, and don't be alarmed.
She said Mum looked like a bad lot.
Oh, my dear, I'm sure she did.
Yes, she did, and it's not right to say it about my mum.
Now, don't you see, child, Miss Cuff didn't know it was your mother.
My mum's lovely, and I'm not going to let any old cow call her bad.
Oh, now, come along, Greta, and help me to get dinner. Come along. Oh. If you mix the salad, you can have a hard-boiled egg.
Oh, well, come on.
Humphrey, dear, give Tilly a sherry. Tilly.
Well, I must say, you all take it very calmly. How long has this sort of thing been going on? Oh, don't you know? Dressing up and going dancing, bringing strange men into the house.
Mrs. Poole brings no strange men into the house.
How do you know?
From my reading of the woman's character. Do you imagine I should allow my sister-in-law to employ in a position of trust a woman in whom I had not confidence?
Are you implying that I abuse her reliance on my judgment? You had better control your tongue.
Oh, of course. Of course, Simon. You know best.
Yes.
Sherry?
Oh, thank you. I'm
pretty late. Here's Dora.
Oh, good evening, Dora. It was such a shock and a surprise seeing that flashy dress. I'm afraid I made a naughty mistake. Oh, I did put my foot in it, didn't I?
Yes.
Well, Tilly, how do the haunts of your youth look to you now?
Oh, everything's much the same. Well, surely, Isabel, surely you must realize now that something should be done about Greta. What ideas can she be getting? What example?
At least it'll be no good to bully her.
I bully?
The kid was scared out of a year's growth.
That's right. Take her part against me. You all do. Why, even Jackie, Miss Brown, Isabel's companion, thinks she can speak to me just as she pleases.
Well, why can't you mind your own business?
There you are. Mind your own business again, from a mere boy. Oh, I'm no one here. Speak to me as you like.
That's
right. Everyone against me. Dora here talks about the haunts of my youth. Well, I begin to wish I'd never come back to them. No one wants me here.
Now, Tilly, you know that's not true. And it's not very nice when Dora's been invited to dinner.
Well, I must think she's been invited to a free-for-all. I'll join you for grub.
Oh, don't mind me. I can stand a great deal of excitement. What's happened to Bogey? He's generally in my lap by this time.
Oh, Bogey is still at the vet's. It's his ears and his paws, you see.
Yeah, that animal ought to be shot.
Why?
Because he's too old. He's a nuisance to himself and everyone else.
I see, because he's old and worn out. He can't help growing old, but all the same, he's abused for it. Well, dogs can't die when they want to, you know, any more than people can. I dare say you think old people ought to be shot, too.
Tilly, please.
I dare say you think I'd better be out of the way. That's it, isn't it? I'm old and wearing out, and no one in the world wants me or cares for me or cares what's to become of me. I ought to be shot.
Tilly, please, dear. I care for you. Well, we all care for you. It's true that I care. And when you hear what I'm going to tell you, you'll believe me.
Must you, Isabel?
Yes, I must. Listen to me, Tilly. Tilly, when Simon asked you this evening if you remembered Mr. McGregor, there was a reason for it.
I put the plain question, and Miss Cuff gave us a plain answer. She hasn't the least recollection of him.
Yes, I have.
You see, of course she has.
When he came to a dance here, he came with you and Mark.
Information I gave you myself.
Well, I remember, too.
Then why didn't you say so at the time?
I told you why. I understood, Tilly. I knew that you didn't want to talk about him. I feel just the same about Mark. And I dare say some people think I've forgotten him. Oh, and Mr. McGregor was so handsome.
He was so tall.
Oh, I don't think I'd have called him tall.
Well, he was tall compared with me.
About 5'8".
You see, even Dora remembers him.
I don't see why you should say even Dora. I may have been plain, but I wasn't blind.
He had a Scottish accent.
The name McGregor almost postulates one.
Oh, Tilly, I'm so glad you remember him so well. And half sorry because, oh dear, if only you hadn't been so shy. Read that.
Isabel, don't you see?
Tilly, read that.
He wanted to marry me.
Yes.
He says, why didn't I get it?
I was down that morning early. I found it in the box and read it. I didn't believe it. I thought perhaps Mark and Simon were playing some cruel joke.
You did not. You've acknowledged to me.
Very well. I disbelieved it because I wanted to. Because just then, for those few days, I was in love with him myself. So I just took it upstairs.
You wanted to marry me and you took it. You were as good as engaged to Mark already.
I wasn't. Oh, Tilly.
Where is he now?
We don't know. He may have married someone else. He may even be alive. We don't know. But that's all in the past, Tilly. It's all over. I had to tell you, because it's the reason for what I'm going to do now. I spoiled your life.
Yes, you spoiled it. You ruined it. Oh, but I think it. What I think
it. All I can do now is nothing, I know. But at least I can make you independent. I can give you all my money. And if you ask why I waited so long, all I can say is it wasn't until I heard that sermon that I realized my wickedness.
Wicked, wicked.
And now, I'm going to try to make amends, as the sermon said. I'm going to give you all my money, Tilly.
Wicked, I'll never forgive you, never.
Yes, yes, I know I was wicked. I've admitted it. But now I'm doing all I can. Oh, Tilly, where are you going?
Oh, Ian, my darling.
No, 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 stop it. Now you see, Simon, you see what I did.
Oh, let her be.
Dora, can't you see?
Yes, I think so. Go after her, Isabel.
Oh, if only she'd let me explain. Simon, you said it was over and done with and that there were no consequences. Well, just look at Tilly now. And I've lived all these years so happily. Oh, Tilly, Tilly.
Humphrey, it is now 9:45.
Oh, that's not bad for a Sunday morning, sir.
I was up at 7. Why can't you eat your breakfast indoors like a Christian?
Perhaps I'm not a Christian.
Rubbish. I distinctly remember your aunt sending you a christening mug.
Oh, good morning.
Ah, Miss Brown, have you seen my sister-in-law this morning?
Yes, I took her tray up. Miss Cuff was asleep, so I brought hers down again. I heard them talking in the night. Well, I went along the corridor. It must have been nearly 3. I thought Mrs. Brocken might like some tea, but... she was in there with Miss Cuff, talking, and sobbing, you know, for ages.
Oh, Lord.
So I just went back to bed.
Well, let us hang our heads. While you and I slept the sleep of the just, or at any rate of the hardened, poor Jackie was standing with her feet cold, ready to do the ministering angel.
Personally, I slept little. Where are the newspapers?
They're late on Sundays. Usually we go for them. It's only at the corner.
Oh, then I'll go for them myself.
Oh, we're in for a gay Sunday.
I think it will be gay, if Tilly takes the money.
What?
Well, don't you see? It releases us. Why have we all stayed here these last miserable days? Because we've been obliged to stay by Mrs. Brocken's obligation to Miss Cuff.
Well, we could hardly have whistled off and left her.
No. But if Tilly takes the money, the obligation's broken. Mrs. Brocken goes to live with Dora, and we're free to go where we please.
Jackie?
Well?
Wasn't Tilly rather snappish with you last night? In the row, I've agreed to. Don't you speak to me, something like that.
Did you notice?
I always notice what anyone says to you.
I'd been rude to her.
Oh, good. Why?
She'd been giving me advice. It doesn't matter. Sometimes people do mean to be kind. As soon as I see her, I'll apologize.
Oh, come off it, darling.
Oh, don't call me darling in that silly way. It's humiliating.
I didn't mean to humiliate you.
No, of course not. You don't mean anything. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm behaving like an idiot.
Yes, I reckon you are. You've let that woman get under your skin, and I'm surprised you haven't more sense. The sooner we both get away from here, the better.
I don't know where to go.
Well, maybe your people will want you at home a bit first. Jackie.
Yes?
Look, perhaps I've been a bit of an idiot too, but... at first, I didn't want to rush things, and then you riled me and... well, it was nice falling in love sedately, wasn't it?
It was sweet.
The first week or two here, when you were still shy and good as gold, and so was I. Oh, heck, it didn't seem possible after all the tough times we'd been through. I just wanted it to last.
So did I.
It was like the Garden of Eden.
I was afraid, even when I heard Mr. Brocken was coming.
Simple, weren't we? He wouldn't have hurt us.
No.
I didn't the first think that Tilly would, and then to see her actually getting hold of you and trying to... worm her own twisted little thoughts into your mind and making a jolly good start at it.
I think she must be the original serpent. I ought to have my ears boxed for listening to her.
Good. If necessary, I'll box them. Is that clear?
Yes, Humphrey.
I shall also make all future arrangements for your welfare. Ooh. You're not to do anything without telling me. In fact, from now on, regard yourself as my responsibility.
Yes, Humphrey.
Now may I call you darling?
Oh, yes, Humphrey.
I met the paper boy on his round.
You certainly lightened his load, sir.
I fear of a purely material burden.
Well, Jackie and I have been discussing things, and we're both agreed that when Tilly takes the money, it's the best all round.
Oh, have you? Well, I don't agree with you. Has your aunt made her appearance?
Oh, no.
And the whole situation may yet be saved.
Please, could I have a word with you?
Certainly, Greta.
In private.
Humphrey... help me get lunch.
Oh, right.
Now, child, if you're worrying about Miss Cuff's interference in your affairs, remember that it is quite unjustified.
You're not forced to take her advice, and no one can make you.
It's not about school. They could send me, but I'd run away. No, it's about the other thing. She's going to find me dad.
Nonsense.
It isn't nonsense to Mum and me. It's awful.
I beg your pardon. When I say nonsense, I mean it is nonsensical of Miss Cuff to take up such a position. How can she find your father?
Well, she said if a man's been in the forces, you can just track him down.
My child, is it after all such a trouble to you to think of finding your father?
Yes.
Oh, I can hardly believe
that. Well, you didn't know him. He used to shout at us. He used to come in at night and throw things about and shout at us for hours and hours. And sometimes he socked my mum. She never let him lay a finger on me. She used to put me in the cupboard, but I heard.
Good heavens.
So he ran away. One morning, while he was still sleeping it off, Mum packed all her things. She got a job in a cafe, and we had a room over the newspaper shop, but Mum was on her feet all day, and, well, of course, she didn't see much of me. And then you come looking for a caretaker, and the newspaper man told us, and when Mum came back from seeing you, she said, Peter, I believe our trouble's over.
Oh, my dear child.
We had the house and the garden, and no one has shouted at us. What was like being in heaven? Oh, well, this is lousy for you, isn't it? It's not your funeral, but I've got to talk to someone. What I want to know is, why can't she leave us alone? What have we done to her?
Miss Cuff believes school would be a good thing for you. And as your mother doesn't agree, she feels your father should be consulted.
But Mum's done everything for me. She got me my orange juice and cod liver oil and everything. Well, why should my dad have a say-so?
Well, because in the eyes of the law, his is the legal right.
Does that mean because Mum married him?
Exactly. That makes him your legal guardian.
So that if Mum hadn't married him, we'd be okay?
Oh, my dear child, if your mother hadn't married your father, you wouldn't be here.
It's because I was on the way she did it, so I wouldn't be a little basket. Oh, she'd do anything for me, Mum would. Oh, if we'd only known.
Rita, there you are. I told her not to come bothering you, sir.
Oh, it's all right. He doesn't mind. He's not angry with us.
Sit down, Mrs. Poole. Now, I've been trying to relieve Greta's anxieties.
Oh, I know you're kind, but what can you do? Well, I suppose this is it. I might have known it was too good to last. We dodged the bombs all right, but this is it.
Oh, cheer up, Mum.
Oh, how can I cheer up when it's all going to begin again? She won't let it rest. I can see that. She'll write letters to the IOPS.
Mrs. Poole, has it struck you that your husband may be dead? If he were in the forces, as is extremely probable, you may be entitled to a pension.
We don't want his pension. We just don't want anything to do with him. He'd have had Greta in a box factory at 14. But we've got it all planned. She's going to be an apprentice at Madame Esme's.
That's right. I'm going to be a beautician.
They get good money and it's nice work. And there's that Miss Tremaine there who'll keep an eye on her. If it hadn't been for that all planned, we'd have done a bunk long since. Oh, I can see you mean well, sir, but you just don't understand. If Jim's dead, I'd be easier for knowing it, but I won't take any risk. You've been very kind, and I'm sorry Greta's troubled you, because what can you do? Come along, love. Come along.
No, sir.
Mrs. Poole.
It's no use, sir. If the worst come to the worst, well, we'll just run for it again.
No, thank you, Jackie, dear. I don't want any coffee. I've had a very nice breakfast. Simon.
Well?
Oh, I'm so glad to see you all again. Oh, Jackie, what became of Dora?
She ate her dinner and went home.
Well, has Miss Cuff recovered her senses?
Oh, yes, she's much quieter. Oh, dear, I had to tell her all over again.
Oh, how dreadful.
And it was.
My dear Isabel, I'm sure we all sympathize with you. The point is, how did Miss Cuff take it?
Dreadfully. She was passionately in love with Ian McGregor. Do you know, I never realized until now that we'd been so cruel to her.
Nonsense. No one was cruel to her.
Well, I'm sure we didn't think we were. We thought she was treated just like one of ourselves. But she wasn't, you know. She only had one new evening dress the time she was with us, and that only cost £4.
Did you sob that out last night?
At least she must appreciate your thoroughgoing desire to make amends. 800 a year. Did you tell her you proposed to consult her with 800 a year?
Yes, but...
But what?
She doesn't believe you'll let me do it.
Ah, then there's your loophole. Leave it to me. I'll deal with her.
No.
Then you're a fool.
Well, I know you've always taught me one, Simon, but I can only do what I believe right. And now, good gracious me, it's a lovely morning. Why do we all sit here looking so solemn?
Because we feel solemn.
Well, I don't. I feel rather tired, but I don't feel solemn in the least. But this afternoon, I shall go and see Dora. I'm going to enjoy living with Dora. I'm going to be very happy.
I think you are, too. And I think you're absolutely heroic.
Oh, my dear.
Now, there are some things I must do.
Heroic. I'm going to read the papers.
Humphrey, come here the minute, dear. Now that you and Jackie have stopped quarrelling...
Jackie and I have never quarrelled.
Oh, that's nonsense, dear, but never mind. I must ask, because if you and she have any plans, I needn't give Jackie notice. But otherwise I must, because, of course, I shan't need a companion any more. Oh, dear me, what I really mean is, do you want to marry Jackie?
Yes, Aunt Isabel, oh, I do.
Oh, my dear boy, I'm so delighted, I really am. Have you asked her?
I've told her.
Oh, that's so much better. I never thought you'd have the sense. Simon, come out, dear. You needn't be tactful anymore.
I wasn't being tactful. I wanted to read the papers. What is it?
Everything's all right between Jackie and Humphrey. They're going to be married now. Isn't that nice?
I will spare you, sir, the effort of being congratulatory.
Oh, I am so pleased. And really, I had nothing whatever to do with it. I just used to say a little prayer each night. And even then I wasn't sure I'd got the right saint. Simon, there's something I want to say to you that I couldn't before the others. And it's about you and me and Mark. We both love Mark very much. You think he'd disapprove of what I'm going to do for Tilly. I know he'd say I was right. And it's no good arguing about it anymore. But he wouldn't like us not to be friends. Don't be angry with me, Simon.
If I have deserved such a rebuke, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, my dear.
Thank you, Simon. You don't believe I love you. But you'd be surprised how much I do.
Good morning.
Tilly. Oh, my dear. Have you had any breakfast?
I found some cold coffee in your room. I drank it.
Oh, well, then now come and sit down because Simon wants to speak to you.
Oh, he does he? I wondered what you were cooking up.
My sister-in-law wishes me to state formally...
State formally? You can't take me in by fine words. Isabel pretends she wants to give me all her money, but she gets you here to see that she doesn't do it. I suppose you'll offer me £50 to forgive her and clear out. Well, I don't think it's enough.
Tilly. No. Tilly, now listen to me. Mm. I did you a great wrong. When we were both girls together and I had every advantage, I did you a great wrong. But I'm going to make amends. You're going to be independent.
I don't believe you.
Simon, make her.
My sister-in-law is speaking the truth. She intends, from motives with which I may say I do not sympathize, to make you a present of some £30,000.
But
she can do it.
She can give me all her money?
Yes.
And you won't stop her?
It's not within my power.
And Isabel really means to do it?
Yes, and let me say here and now, for it should be said, that I consider her behavior quixotic to the point of insanity. If I had the power to stop her, I would. Does that reassure you? I don't consider you worthy of such generosity. It was an unlucky day for all of us when Mrs. Massey brought you into this house. I don't for one moment...
Oh, Simon,
No, let me finish. It's time someone spoke out. So I don't for one moment believe that you were ever in love with McGregor, or that your heart was broken, or any of the rest of it. I believe you are taking advantage of Isabel's simplicity. You'll beggar her and laugh at her. But she can do what she likes with her own property, and I can't stop her. Now, will you have the decency to admit that my sister-in-law is speaking the truth when she offers you the money?
I don't want it.
Tilly, of course you do.
Be quiet.
I don't want the money. I won't take it.
Oh, but you must. I've got to make it up to you somehow. I mean, think of all you'll be able to do. You can go about and travel and buy yourself nice clothes. Oh, really, Tilly, don't you strip it.
On the contrary, Miss Cuff shows the most remarkable good sense. As she herself has just proposed, £100 a year.
Oh, Simon, now you just be quiet. Tilly simply hasn't realized.
Yes, I have. I've seen old women with money.
alone in hotels. It's better than starving, of course, but I don't want to be alone. That's what's so dreadful when you're growing old. Oh, Issy, I've misjudged you. It's you who must forgive me. But, my darling, I don't want your money. Don't give it to me. Share it with me. And don't let us ever be parted again.
Oh, my dear, now that's nonsense. You must take it all. Well, you'll be rich. Well, you can have a companion of your own.
Well, I don't want a companion, and I don't want to travel or buy things. I just want to be with someone.
Well, so you will. You'll make friends. You've never been able to make friends, poor Tilly. You've been too worried and nervous. But you'll make friends now, and you'll stay in lovely places.
With you, with you. Don't turn me away, you see. I don't want friends. I want someone belonging to me. You say you're going to live with Dora, but Dora's no relation, and I am. We'll live here together.
This house, too, Isabel? Are you going to give her the house, too?
No, dear. The house is for Humphrey. I'm giving it to Humphrey, Tilly, because I shan't have anything to leave him. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, I shan't mind anything as long as we're together. We can both live in an hotel. Well, I'd much rather live in an hotel if I'm not by myself and people know who I am. Well, we'll find a nice hotel, won't we, you see? Or if you'd rather travel, we'll travel, but we'll stay together all our lives and never be lonely any more.
Mrs. Brocken, you mustn't.
That's what I want. That's what I've always wanted. Someone who belongs to me. A relation, so that people will know who I am and not look down on me.
What you rather forget is that Aunt Isabel has other relations already. She has me, for example. Aunt Isabel, if you do give me this house, I very much hope that you'll continue to live in it.
You? What will you want with Isabel when you're married and have a family here? We'll give you the house and welcome, but Issy and I won't live here. Tell him. Tell him he'd rather be with me, Issy. I'm owed it, aren't I, after all I've suffered? Tell them you'd rather live with your cousin.
Oh, hold your tongue,
Aunt Isabel.
Issy, please tell them.
Yes, yes, dear, I quite understand. I understand everything. Now go in and wash your eyes, and I'll come in a moment.
Promise me.
Yes, dear, I promise. I just want a word with Simon first to clear everything up.
Look, will someone tell me what the deuce has been happening?
Miss Cuff offered your aunt's entire capital, prefers her company in an hotel, the arrangement to be a permanent one.
But we mustn't let Mrs. Brocken. It would kill her.
Of course I shan't let her.
I'm not aware that Miss Cuff's society has actually killed anyone so far. Strikes me as a very suitable arrangement.
All you care about is keeping the money in the family. At least Humphrey doesn't. At least Humphrey's disinterested. And he won't allow it.
I certainly shall not.
Simon, weren't you surprised?
Considerably.
Yes, I know I was. Oh, I'm so glad I never really thought badly of her.
Oh, Aunt Isabel, the whole thing's preposterous. And I've just said that I shan't allow it.
Really? It isn't preposterous at all. In fact, now I think about it, I begin to see it's the best plan. Poor Tilly is dreadfully lonely. That's probably what's been the matter with her.
How can you bear to live with her? You can't.
Oh, yes, I can. You couldn't. But Tilly won't bother me nearly as much as she would you. You and Humphrey don't understand, but in my young days, and Simon will remember it, people put up with their relations. I mean, some of ours weren't very nice, but they all came and stayed with us. And Ruth and I even had to go and stay with them. It's only lately that people feel they have a right to choose their own company. Oh, dear. I had looked forward to living with Dora. There it is.
But it isn't. You haven't got to endure, Miss Cuff.
I believe I have, dear. It's no use giving people things they don't want, especially when there's something they do. Besides, when you get to our age, there's nothing like being with people who were young when you were.
Aunt Tilly's memory is likely to be resentful, to hark back to McGregor.
Well, perhaps. But I shan't mind talking about him myself, because he was fascinating. And, of course, I shall talk to Tilly about Mark. And there'll be other people in the hotel.
You don't want to live in a hotel.
Oh, but, dear, my hotel in Bath is very nice. There was a waiter.
She'll be rude to waiters.
Well, I can always smooth them down afterwards. I get on with waiters. They tell me about their families. The one at Bath...
I expect she cheats at bridge.
Well, I shan't let her. If she cheats, I won't play with her. And if I don't play with her, Tilly might find it quite difficult to make up a four. Simon. Simon, now, aren't I right?
Very probably. Anyone who plays bridge with you, my dear, can probably stand Miss Cuff as well.
Yes, now, that's just what I meant. Tilly needs someone to, well, to make way for her a little. You'll find we shan't do so badly.
I can think of no worse punishment for the worst crime than to live all my life with Tilly Cuff.
Yes, but it won't be all my life, dear. I've had my life, all the best of it. I'm just on the last lap. Now I must go to Tilly.
Please, can I have a word with you, ma'am?
Yes, Mrs. Poole?
Well, I'm afraid I will have to go. That Miss Cuff.
Issy!
Oh, blimey, here she comes, ma'am. I'll come back later.
Issy! Issy, you said you were coming straight in.
Yes, so I am, dear, but there's just one thing I must settle first, because Mrs. Poole is going to give notice again.
Well, that didn't worry you now.
Yes, it does, dear, because of Simon. And, of course, someone must look after him. Now, Tilly, I know you want me to send Greta to boarding school, but I'm not going
but,
to.
But, my dear,
it's not the expense. I just don't believe the child would benefit.
Yes, but it...
Yes, and you must drop the idea of looking for Greta's father, because that's why the Pools are so upset. And if it weren't for that, they'd stay.
My dear, if they don't want to be helped, I'm sure I don't want to help them. Why should I? It's their own business.
Thank you, Tilly. I'll tell Mrs. Poole at once. Now, come along in and finish dressing.
My dear Isabel, I am dressed. This is a tea gown.
Well, it looks very untidy for Sunday morning. Come along.
It came from Pucker.
Did it, dear? Well, tomorrow we'll send it to the cleaners.
Well, I'll be blowed.
Good heavens.
Uncle Simon, do you know what we've just seen?
Well, what have you just seen?
We've seen my Aunt Isabel dealing with Tilly Cuff unhampered by conscience. Was a highly impressive sight.
Mrs. Brocken said they'd get on well together.
So they will, and there's an end of all our trouble over Tilly Cuff.
The end for us, because Mrs. Brocken's taken Tilly on for life. I still think it's heroic.
So do I. Come on, Jackie. Let's give Uncle Simon a taste of the perfect peace after we're all gone.
Goodbye.
I say.
Hey.
The Foolish Gentlewoman by Marjorie Sharp was adapted by Donald McWhinney. It was the first of a series of some of Dame Sybil Thorndike's favourite plays, which will be broadcast from time to time in Saturday Night Theatre. Isabel Brocken was played by Sybil Thorndike. Simon Brocken, Walter Fitzgerald. Tilly Cuff, Gladys Spencer. Dora Tremaine, Mary Wimbush. Jacqueline Brown, Eva Haddon. Humphrey Garrett, Anthony Jackson. Mrs. Poole, Marjorie Forsyth. And Greta, Cecile Chevreau. The narrator was Preston Lockwood. The play was produced by Ronald Mason, and not by Graham Gould as advertised. Sybil Thorndike is appearing in Arsenic and Old Lace at the Vaudeville Theatre, London.